views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I am here with my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be back.
It's great to be back. We had such a wonderful first show. We were talking about humanity. We are going to spend the whole month talking about our human family and understanding our place within reality. Can you imagine? That's a big topic. So, Dorothy, before we get into it, we left off. We were talking about seven principles that underlie our reality on the first show, and we're going to continue with this show. But I'd love for our listeners to hear a little bit about each of us first. So if you start, then I'll follow after you.
Okay, great. I'm on this show representing the School for Esoteric Studies, which provides esoteric discipleship training to produce world servers. I've been a student with the school for over 40 years. It's been the main context in which I have done my own spiritual development, and I'm currently the chair of the board of directors. I have just a little bit of background. I grew up as a child of missionary parents, first in China, then we had to leave as refugees. We went to India. I went to school in the north of India in the Himalayan Mountains. One of the highlights of my young life was that when the Dalai Lama went into exile, he first went into exile in Mussoorie, which is the community where my school was, and then later moved to Dharamsala. But while he was in Mussoorie, he did come and speak at our school. I had the opportunity to serve tea, had the opportunity to interact with him several times. And that experience is really, in retrospect, what set me on the path of exploring spirituality in a broader sense than just a traditional religion. He has such a huge energy field. I mean, it's just his aura is incredible. And just being with him, which in India is called doing darshan, we would walk and just sit with him and experience that energy. That was amazing. And I had already had other experiences, but it was the culminating experience for me that Christianity was not the only religion, that there was a broader spiritual base. And I came later to understand that as the ageless wisdom teachings. But that was really a pivotal experience for me that has helped me begin to think about spiritual principles in general and how to apply them in service to the whole world.
Wow, that's a beautiful, beautiful story. I had no idea. I did not know that. That's the first time I heard that. I can understand where these principles of interconnectivity come up. I mean, being in that sort of energetic field and seeing how that actually affects your entire life and your perspective on beingness, that's just beautiful. Wow, thanks for sharing that, Dorothy.
Mm-hmm.
So go on. No, please. Go on.
Yeah, I just would add one other thing because I think it can be helpful. He was also very important to me as a young person because when he came and spoke at our school, which he actually did a couple of times, he spoke about the tension for him of being the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism. And yet, when he was there in that context, people feeling that they could not fight the oppression of the Chinese coming in, and that that he needed to leave in order to give his people space to actually act. And but just the agony that he described of that tension of what he should be doing and how he could best be supportive and nurturing of people really made a difference to me.
And he's really worked through that. I mean, he's really used that as lessons that for us all that we can all learn. Right now, I'm reading his new book, which is just incredible. It's the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. It's called The Book of Joy, and it's just a remarkable book. It's also interesting to note, Dorothy, without going too far into it, even that I'm actually literally holding the book, and it's brought me such joy. I got it for Christmas. That here's an archbishop, here's a Christian leader, and here's a Buddhist leader, and the two of them have this incredible friendship, this incredible joy that exists between them, and they are constantly bridging and constantly finding what their two spiritual practices have in common, and it is so much. In fact, it's hard for them to find what they don't have in common. So I find it interesting that you as well mentioned that coming into contact with him was a way of seeing that Christianity was not the only sort of way to look at a spiritual life. And it's interesting as well that within the Ageless Wisdom, and what attracted me to it so much was that the Buddha nature and the Christ nature are brought up so often in terms of the heart and the mind. And that's going to be something that I know we're going to talk about all year long, is the principle of heart and principle of mind and how they come together. So there's so many instances in that story and in our lives in ways that that these two religious practices embody these principles and are so willing to work together and become connected. It's beautiful. So, myself, I'm going to make it quick because I really want to get into our juicy topic. So, Spirit Fire is another nonprofit educational organization. As Dorothy had mentioned, both of us are very inspired by the Ageless Wisdom, and both of us dedicated to this idea of an awakened humanity. Spirit Fire has got a retreat center where we host wonderful retreats. It's a virtual revolving door of spiritual practices of different practitioners, teachers, meditators, contemplators. So it's wonderful to be involved there. We've got our own meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness. And that Practice of Living Awareness was the foundation for Spirit Fire Radio's first season, where we just highlighted amazing individuals and what their experience in life, the way they used meditation tools in everyday practice. So now we're moving on to a second season, and we're going to talk about those practices that make our lives purposeful. How do we take spiritual concepts and how do we make them practical? How do we use them in our everyday lives? So we're going to take a different concept each month, and by the end, we think we're going to have a beautiful body of work that really talks about what it is to be a human being who is having the spiritual experience. I know we're going to talk about that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. What is that about, and how can we participate in ways that will help the greater good? So the first show, we talked about these seven principles that underlie our reality. Dorothy has written an amazing series of books, and the first book, which is called Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen, goes deep into these principles. So in talking about humanity, we thought it would be good to sort of talk about the framework within which we exist. You know, how do we move within our world, and what are the raw materials that we work with? We've talked about interconnectivity, that we're all interconnected energy waves, that everything is energy. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the first show, we hope you'll do so. We talked a lot about debunking Newton, that Newton served a purpose, but we have moved on, and we have moved on to understanding the world as energy and quantum physics. We talked about participation and nonlinearity. We talked about time and the way that it actually is nonlinear, that it bends and folds and collapses. So we're going to pick up that conversation today with interdependence. No, Dorothy, we're going to go to non-duality.
Non-duality.
Well, am I scared of non-duality, do you think?
I don't know, Steve. I don't know.
I've been accused in the past. So we have a couple minutes till we have our first break. So I'm going to take a few deep breaths and get ready to talk about non-duality. And if you could just give us, you know, a little introduction to ways in which we can see ourselves as non-dual.
Okay. So the for people that are interested in this topic, my third book, which came out this last year, is called Moving Beyond Duality. And I researched and wrote this book based on the concept that if we see the world dualistically, if we see the world as an us-them, then it is easy for us to be violent, to be harmful to others. If we recognize that we actually are interconnected and the world is not dualistic, that has specific implications. So I'd like to get into those after the break, Steve, whenever that happens. But that's what we're going to be looking at.
And we had a really wonderful conversation, if I remember correctly, because when on Spirit Fire Radio's first season, we started with your last book. We started with Moving Beyond Duality, and we worked our way forward. And if anybody wants to look in the archives, you can go to spiritfireradio.com and look in the archives and listen to any one of those three shows. And we talked about an us versus them mentality, and we know that that's just rampant today in our world. We really seem to be in such a hypercritical world that is my word better than your word? Is my word more convincing than your word? And boy, I mean, to really wrap our heads around the complexity that is actually our world and that it's not black and white is an endeavor. And I hope will be very liberating for us all. So we're going to go deep into it. As soon as we get back, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Registration is now open for the 25th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference. Join the fabulous presenters from around the country on February 16th through the 20th. If you believe in raising the feminine spirit and transforming our world, then this conference is for you. Get your tickets now. One day and full weekend passes are available. For more information about presenters and tickets, visit womanofwisdom.org. That's womanofwisdom.org.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
This is Sarah Luce from Small Steps Big Breakthrough Radio. I want to invite you to join me and women across the globe for my Sister Spirit Party, where we're going to be teaching you how to lose those limiting beliefs, toss the struggles, lose all the old stories that keep you stuck, so that you can leap fully into your power in 2017. Girl, the world needs you to shine right now. So please join us for this powerful and fun group mentoring called Sister Spirit Party. And now, till February 10th, I'm going to give you $50 off your enrollment. So go to sarahluce.com and enter your coupon code SISTER50 for your enrollment discount. Girl, we need you to shine. Join us. Join the Sister Spirit Party. Let's get your power on.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. This is Dorothy Riddle with Steve Kramer. And if you were with us for the first segment, you know that we're talking about the seven principles that that govern our actual reality. These seven principles are outlined in much more detail in my book, Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen. But we are at the point where we're talking about the fourth principle, which is non-duality. And I actually wrote an entire book on this because it's, to me, so important. The book is called Moving Beyond Duality. And the basic, one of the basic arguments there is that the reason for violence, the reason for separatism in our world is because we have this habit of us-them thinking, of dualistic thinking. Now, Steve, I want to just take a moment to help our listeners understand why we might think that duality is what our world is all about. We, in fact, are flooded by a variety of stimuli every second, and our minds have to do something with that. And so we have a sorting process where we first say, do I have to pay any attention at all? And then, do I have to pay attention right away, or can I put it aside and come back to it later? So we have a whole lot of these sorting into two categories. And it's easy for us to then start thinking that that is the way the world is structured. And we forget that we are the ones that create the categories. We are the ones that decide how many categories there are. And so if we're thinking only in us, them, the two categories, we're the ones that created that. That's not really the way the world is. The world is much more complex, as you mentioned, Steve, and there are several ways that we miss this. One of the most common is we overlook the continuum. Philosophers call this neglecting the middle. We look only at the two ends, you know, the contrast of the two ends. And we have several different examples of that. We have, you know, you use the term black or white. Yeah, but there's all of the grays and creams in between. One of the most dynamic conversations going on right now is about gender and the fact that there's not just two genders, and people are identifying as non-binary in order to reflect that. And I wonder if you have any particular thoughts about that, Steve, because I think that that's one way of making this particular principle real to our listeners.
Well, what comes to mind when I hear you talking about that is the very fact that in meditation, we are really trying to train people to simply be in the present. People think that meditation is really about checking out, and it couldn't be further from the truth. Meditation is about actually checking in. It's about being fully present and engaged in the now. And I think one of the biggest sort of challenges, or sort of one of the biggest holes that we fall into with duality, is that so many people live in the past. They are their present is defined completely by their past, or they are worried, or they're anticipating the future. And I think so many of us could check into how many times we're existing throughout our day that we're either worried about the past, or we're reminiscing, or we're wishing it was the past. You know, we've got a sort of attachment to the past, or we're anticipating the future, and it keeps us really from the now. And there's so many opportunities in the now, and there's so much to enjoy. There's so much joy to be cultivated in the now, in the present tense. So I think for me that came up was the past and present. And mentioning, you know, mentioning the gender issue is just, I hope within this year that we will spend an entire show talking about that, because it is so interesting. It's on the cover of this month's National Geographic. And I mean, go figure. It's a really wonderful topic.
Mm-hmm. So another way that we start to think dualistically is we ignore interconnection, which is really interesting because we talked in the last show about interconnectivity and the fact that we are all part of this big cosmic energy field. Bruce Lipton talks has made an excellent point that illustrates this. He says, you know, scientists used to think that the nucleus of the cell was the important piece, and of course the nucleus would be very separate. And in fact, it's the membrane. It is what mediates the connection between one cell and another. It's that interconnectivity that is so important. Another way that we get into dualistic thinking is we oversimplify and we make stereotypes. We say all Asians are good at math, or all blacks have rhythm, or something like that. So there are many ways in which we get into this way of thinking, which is quite limiting. And I'd like to challenge our listeners. We talked a little bit about this in the past show, but I'd like to challenge people to begin breaking out of this by whenever you hear yourself giving two options, talking about either or, talking about all, there are words like that that will clue you to the fact that you're using dualistic thinking, to instead give a third or a fourth or a fifth option. This is the way that I started working on it. It's very revealing, and it's very rich to start really consciously being aware that there are multiple options.
It sounds like it would be really good for your brain, too. Talk about neuroplasticity. I mean, that's a wonderful way to build new synapses in your brain, is to challenge yourself to not reduce. You know, again, there we are at that word reduction, you know, which is very Newtonian, right? That there are many working parts that actually we can expand, and we can search for you know, a greater complexity. It reminds me, and I think we talked about this way back last summer when you and I talked about duality, that there was an incident, a situation. I'm trying to get the right word. It wasn't a situation or an incident. It was an experience. There we go. That Tim and I had at Spirit Fire, where we hosted a group of yoga moms, and they're all moms that have yoga that come to the retreat center as a way to just let the family be in their space, and they all come and meditate and do yoga and have a wonderful time. And there were 16 lovely female yogis, all moms, in the dining room, and one of them looked in the kitchen and said, "You know, this is so great to see two men cooking for all these women." And it was so interesting what happened to the vibration of the room. It just collapsed. Tim and I had such a strange look on our face because we had not even thought of them actually as a group of women. We thought of them as these wonderful retreat guests and these human beings that we adore. We host them twice a year. And we had not even thought of ourselves as two men cooking, nor of this stereotype of ourselves being cooks and that should be for women. And it was just... it was so odd and reductive. It took us time to wrap our heads around what it was they were saying, because it was so simplistic and so not the truth of the situation or of who we were. So we could actually feel the room contract. And that's interesting that is actually what happens when we reduce ourselves to dualistic thinking. We actually don't allow for opportunity. We actually are, you know, we're reducing things to such simple terms that it works against us, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. And I should just mention one other way that people can engage with this issue. This reductionism, the static component, separate components, is very much part of the Newtonian model. And one of the first breaks from that was Gestalt. And we have, even if people are not psychologists or into Gestalt psychology, we have sayings from there that are helpful. And one of the ones that comes to my mind is, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Mm. Okay,
so you don't want to be breaking things down into two parts. You want to be looking at the whole that flows out of whatever parts are there.
Right, and that... I'm sorry, that again goes back to some of the earlier principles that we were talking about. I love that it's all related. It's all this evolution of science. It's beautiful.
Right, right. And I'm going to use that to move us on to the next principle, which is interdependence, because, again, that's very much related. Again, from Newton, we got this idea that we were these separate entities, but in fact, we are interconnected and interdependent. I mean, think, just one practical example is, think of our relationship with the natural environment, with trees, for example, in terms of absorbing the carbon dioxide that we produce and them in turn producing the oxygen that we breathe. And anyone that spends time in woods, you know what that air is like. It's just wonderful. The difficulty that we're in right now with climate change is that we're producing way, 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 way more carbon dioxide than the natural environment can handle and transform. So that's one example of the mutual reliance that we have.
So, Dorothy, I just want to ask quickly, because so these words are pretty related, interdependent and interrelated.
Or interconnected.
Sorry, interconnected and interdependent. We're going to go to a break in just a minute, but before that, I'd love to just hear what you see as the difference between being interconnected and interdependent.
Okay, so here's one way of thinking about it. Interconnected, we're all part of the same energy field, but we don't, and what we do does affect somebody else, but we don't have to think about the actual relationship there. Whereas interdependence is a recognition of that mutual reliance. And one of the phrases I'm going to put out there that I think is so beautiful is, again, from Brian Schwimm. He says, when we think about our environment, when we think about non-humans, we need to think of them not as resources with whom we're interconnected, but as relatives with whom we have an interdependent relationship.
So the ways in which we coexist and are dependent on each other for that existence.
That's
nice.
Right.
We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to go further into interdependence. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit spiritfireretreatcenter.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Have you wanted to make more money without working harder or more? Maybe you've tried new ways to bring in extra income without success. Hi, my name is Deb Acker, and in addition to being the host of Truth Talk Radio, I'm an intuitive life coach and energy healer. I clear energy blocks to all areas of life, including abundance. Did you know many times we have an invisible income ceiling? So no matter what we do, our income never goes up, or if our income does go up, we experience an unexpected expense that negates this. How much would it be worth to significantly increase your income or even have unexpected income show up? When I was in the corporate world, I used these techniques to increase my income by tens of thousands of dollars without changing my work routine. In fact, I worked even less, and I now help clients do the same. If this resonates for you and you're truly ready for abundance in your life, I'd love to gift you with my pattern identification session. Simply contact me on the contact page of my website, deborahacker.com. That's deborahacker.com. And let me know you heard about this gift through Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to connecting soon.
Curious about the meaning of life? Do you want to deepen your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. The school also organizes group meditations each year to benefit humanity. Whether you're just beginning to reflect on the spiritual side of your life or are a more experienced spiritual seeker, the school warmly welcomes you to join our group. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit esotericstudies.net. That's esotericstudies.net.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. We are having such a great conversation. I'm so happy to be joined by Dr. Dorothy Riddle. We are talking about interdependence. Before we went to the break, Dorothy was talking about the difference between interconnectivity and interdependence. Dorothy, can you tell us that quote again? You said a quote that was talking about our non-human partners on the planet.
Right. Brian Schwimm talks about needing to think of these partners not as resources to be exploited, but as relatives.
Beautiful. It made me think of the Earth as, in ways that we sometimes can use the Earth as a resource. It made me think of this movie called Planetary, which is trying to have us see that we are all connected and the Earth is our home, so that we really don't exploit any of the Earth's resources, but that we see that we're all one and part of this living organism. We talked about that in the past show and a bit on this show, in the ways that we're part of a system, a moving, breathing, living system. And what was really cool about this movie was begins with a set of interviews with astronauts who were talking about their experience of seeing the Earth from the outer space for the first time. And all of them are just overcome with wonder and awe. And one of them in particular had this epiphany that the Earth was a living creature, that it was this organism, the Earth, that created all of the kingdoms through an evolutionary process. So it created the mineral kingdom, created the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, and then the human kingdom, so that each of these sort of evolutions of life within the planet created so that there was an intelligence capable of a scenario of removing itself from the Earth, meaning that human beings got in a spaceship and went to outer space and looked back at the Earth so that it could see itself in context with the whole cosmos. It was such a fascinating revelation of seeing yourself as an extension of the Earth itself as a living being that was able to observe itself as a whole. And it just moved me, and something shifted in me that has never gone away of the observer, that the observer is so important, and seeing the Earth as creating life that could observe itself. Really fascinating. It made me think of this idea of interdependence, that we're all part of this living system and perhaps just an extension of it.
Exactly. And in fact, there's a declaration of scientists that the Earth is, in fact, a biosphere, an intelligent being, self-regulating. One of the issues with climate change is that we are pushing the Earth beyond its ability to balance and maintain in a way that will support human life. And not to get too negative about it, but I think one of the things that as humanity we forget is that we are not essential to the earth. The earth is essential to us. We could disappear. We could drive ourselves into oblivion. The earth would continue to function. So we are partners with that biosphere, and we need to be respectful. We also, there are other beings also, and I just want to mention briefly, Steve, the concept of non-human personhood. There are many species that are self-aware, that are intelligent, highly social, that we've thought in the past of as, quote, just animals. I think particularly of dolphins and whales, the great apes, the elephants, all of these, and there are many, many more that deserve our respect as other sentient beings. It may also surprise people that there's science about plant life, that plant life is also sentient. And in fact, there's a law in Switzerland about how plant life is treated, recognizing this sentience.
I just wanted to say that it's amazing. Just this week in the news was that Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus will be shutting down. And I had this discussion with Tim. I said, do you really think it's because of the animals, or is it because we need to be more engaged? You know, we sort of need the Cirque du Soleil-esque kind of entertainment. And he said, no, absolutely, that he believes that we have just reached a level of consciousness that just cannot endure animals being treated that way. And
right,
it's beautiful.
It was the treatment of elephants that was the the final thing. And remember, I mean, elephants are highly intelligent. They are matriarchal. They are very social, and we keep them in the circus. You know, they're kept chained separately, individually. They're trained through punishment. It's been horrible. The same thing has happened with SeaWorld and what was going on with the orcas. So that is developing. If anybody wants to have a quick summary of the current science, in my book, Moving Beyond Duality, in Appendix B, there is the science for the animal kingdom, both vertebrate and non-vertebrate, and plant life and mineral life. So all of that is there, and I would urge people to take a look at that. We need to grow beyond the idea of where we think it's humanity versus the rest of the world. I give one last example, Steve, before we move on. There is now a movement towards what's called recognizing green infrastructure. I mentioned the production of oxygen. There's also, you know, if you think about like a hillside, and you want to not have it all come apart when there's a lot of rain, it's plant life that holds the earth together. There have been studies showing that in terms of sea surge, that having a waterfront that is not concrete but is natural, that will survive and buffer much better. And finally, another example is we tend to pave things over, so we make these concrete culverts, whereas if we leave ditches as natural, filled with weeds, which we tend to think of as not useful, what those weeds will do is they will filter the water that comes through so that when it passes down into the earth, it's been purified and can be used by us as drinking water.
Beautiful. So many options.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution.
So, I'm going to move us on to adaptability. Is that okay?
Yes, that is evolution in action, is it not?
Yes, adaptive. Yes.
Yeah,
and
let's
go on. Yeah, there is a, for these last two principles, I want to give particular acknowledgement to a biologist, Lynn Margulis, whose research I find just absolutely fascinating. And what she has shown is that in terms of how we evolve, the Darwinian model was that it's genetic mutation, which takes a very long time. She says, no, it's not really that. It's bacterial genetic recombination, that the bacteria are so prevalent around the world. I mean, you know, they're maybe one of the most plentiful life forms, and these little microbes have access to the single gene pool, and they can recombine in order to modify what's going on. So when we talk about the neuroplasticity, part of what we're talking about at a physical level is the action of these microbes. And we can come back, I want to refer back to what the Earth does in terms of adaptability and its resilience. It's really amazing. It's got more than 10 million living species, and it manages the environment such that all of these species are able to survive and thrive.
Nice. Well, talking about bacteria makes me think again of interdependence. I mean, if we remove the bacteria from our body, we'd be done. So it's amazing.
Exactly.
It's amazing to think that we've got this physical body that's got its own environment, that's got its own terrain that supports other living life that's not our own at all. It's very interesting. So we're totally independent in that way. I've been reading Man's Search for Meaning. I don't know if you've heard that book. It's a very sort of profound book by an author, Viktor Frankl. He was a survivor of Auschwitz, and just been really enjoying this book. But he talks about adaptability, and I'll read a quote of his later that I think is so wonderful. But there's a point where he's talking about chess, and he says, if you were sitting across from I'm just paraphrasing, if you were sitting across from a world champion chess player and you asked him, hey, you know, world champion chess player, what's the best chess move in the world? He wouldn't have an answer, because it would be completely dependent on the situation within the game and dependent upon the personality of your opponent. So, you know, it's true. There's no perfect answer for life. It's about being fluid and evolving with the situation and being adaptable to the situation. It's the wisdom that we bring to the chess table and our ability to adapt to the situation, because we're not alone. So we've got all these other factors around us, and it's how do we adapt to those factors?
Right, right. And it is our willingness to collaborate, because we cannot be adaptable in a vacuum.
Yes, indeed, which brings us to cooperation. And so we're going to go to a break, and in the last segment, are you ready to move on, do you think, to cooperation?
Yes, absolutely, yep.
Wonderful. So
yeah, we'll talk about cooperation and practical implications, yes.
Yeah, ways we can use all of this information. So we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit spiritfireretreatcenter.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
This is Sarah Luce from Small Steps Big Breakthrough Radio. I want to invite you to join me and women across the globe for my Sister Spirit Party, where we're going to be teaching you how to lose those limiting beliefs, toss the struggles, lose all the old stories that keep you stuck, so that you can leap fully into your power in 2017. Girl, the world needs you to shine right now. So please join us for this powerful and fun group mentoring called Sister Spirit Party. And now, till February 10th, I'm going to give you $50 off your enrollment. So go to sarahluce.com and enter your coupon code SISTER50 for your enrollment discount. Girl, we need you to shine. Join us. Join the Sister Spirit Party. Let's get your power on.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
The Earth is an ever-changing being. Goddess Light, shamanic healer, Bree Gibbs guides us through the ascending worlds, bringing forth knowledge and truth. As a light creator, she is here to provide new information needed at this time in our evolution. Join Bree as she shares messages from guides, spirits, ascended masters, goddesses, and others. Tune in the second and fourth Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, and Thursdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, for Silver Gaia Radio.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. We've been having a great conversation about the principles that underlie our reality. Before the break, we were talking about adaptability, and we are going to move on to this concept of cooperation, which, goodness, we all know is necessary, and we wish the world had more of it, right, Dorothy? Cooperation.
Yes, we certainly do.
And actually, you know, just to mention, it's really wonderful, you know, the second season of Spirit Fire Radio is a collaboration, and by partaking in collaboration, you have got to embrace cooperation. We a few weeks back, we did a sort of a preview of the year to come with Dr. Pat, and we talked about that. We talked about collaboration and cooperation and how important and what it really the goodness that it brings up in all of us in learning to work together. It's so essential to creating a better world. Yeah.
Well, I love the fact that we are focusing now on cooperation, because there's a lot of mythology we may not consciously think about it, but there's a lot of mythology that competition is where it's at.
Yeah.
And in fact, what Margulis has shown us is that we evolve through networking. Starting at the microbial level, it is the networking of those microbes with other microbes that make larger and larger systems. So this brings us back to what we talked about last week about being part of a system, being interconnected, and it really is the networking mentality that moves us forward. Now, again, there's a lot of myth out there that people are basically motivated by self-interest. Well, it's true that self-interest can play a role, but what the research shows, especially in neuroeconomics, is that helpfulness, the feeling of being helpful, is a much stronger motivation. And in fact, it's interesting, there are studies now showing that chimpanzees are generous in an environment where you could expect them to engage in a kind of zero-sum competition. And they might even be more generous than their human counterparts. I don't know about that. But cooperation, approaching the world from a cooperation perspective, is what helps us to build trust and to create more than we're able to do just on our own. And actually, that's what service is all about. And we'll be coming back to that. Is service one of the main dynamics of service is reaching out to others and working together with others so that we expand what people describe as a limited pie. You don't have to accept the fact that there is just this pie and there's slices, and if you have half of the pie, then there's only half left for other people. Instead, what you can do is you can expand the parameters of that pie so that there's more. If we look in the natural world, we see, for example, elephants, whom I referred to just before the break, they use their tusks to enlarge various areas where there's spring water under the surface so that smaller species are able to access that water, which they wouldn't be able to on their own. So that's an example of interdependent cooperation. Now, there is a role for competition. I have a sister who is an excellent athlete, and she competes in various sports. But she does that from a perspective of self-improvement, you know, of testing herself. We have the concept now of the personal best that you try yourself against. So that form of competition can certainly be very growthful. But underlying it all is a sense of cooperation. We see this in team sports. You may compete against another team, but if you can't cooperate within your own team, you're not going to get anywhere.
That's sort of a perfect scenario in sort of needing to know the strength of yourself and really develop your own skills, but then you lend them to the greater group. You know, I've never been a big sports fan just simply because of competition. I've never been one for the somebody wins, somebody loses. I always want everybody to win. But I have a quote by Mario Cuomo that's so appropriate. He talks about his love for bunting within a baseball game. He says that he talks about baseball being a community activity and that you have these nine people that are all helping one another. But he says, I love bunt plays. I love the idea of the bunt. I love the idea of sacrifice. Even the word is good. He says it's giving yourself up for the good of the whole. So that idea of a bunt and sacrificing your own sort of personal glory so that somebody else can move forward to a few bases. So nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to use that as a springboard to talk about the idea of being cosmic citizens, if that's okay perfect. With you, Steve.
That's perfect. I was just going to say we have 5 minutes left, so
okay.
We definitely want to
keep going. So very quickly on this, and then we can talk more about what the practical implications are. But the reason why I called my first book Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen is in recognition that we are part of this larger whole. And so, as with any citizens, we have certain rights. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of the United Nations spells out some of these. We have the right to respect. We have the right to be safe in our environment. We have the right to ask for help and to assume that we can receive help in a cooperative manner. But we also have responsibilities. We need to be aware of other people's needs, and we need to be accountable for our own energy. So if I'm feeling really grumpy and unhappy, I need to manage my energy field so that I don't just spew that out over everybody around me. And what this brings us to is the keynote of the universe, really, which is joy. And joy comes out of an experimental approach as opposed to a competitive approach. And choosing what our focus is, choosing how we participate, how we cooperate.
Nice. Yes, it's been, I have read a quote that says that the basis of life is freedom and the purpose of life is joy. And joy is a wonderful word that I know we're going to talk about quite a bit on the next couple shows. So we're halfway through the month. The first two shows dedicated to science. What is science's approach to understanding our human family? And on the next two, we're going to talk about spirituality. What is the spiritual approach to understanding our human family? And what do these two have in common? So freedom and joy are really two very important words. I had talked about Viktor Frankl, who is an author that wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and he was a survivor of Auschwitz. And he says that forces beyond your control can take away everything you possess except one thing: your freedom to choose how you will respond to a situation. He says you cannot always control what happens to you, but you can control what you think, feel, and do about what happens to you. So there it is. There, we have the choice to respond. And you mentioned the word responsibility, Dorothy, which is another word that I'm sure we're going to go deep into. So responsibility says then, well, what do we do with this? So we've really only got a couple minutes before we have to end the show. I have a feeling it would be nice to begin the next show with a bit of what are the implications of science, and how do these principles that we've discussed, how do they inform us in ways in which we can live our lives, and what does spirituality have to say about this? Maybe just a few sentences. We have a minute left. Maybe a few sentences from you, and then I think we'll just take it to the next show. What do you think?
Sure. Sure. I think that's fine. I think the question that I would like to leave with our listeners, because I'd like us to pick up there next time, Steve, is how might we live our lives differently if we really accept these seven principles, if we really accept these scientific findings that our world is not deterministic or dualistic or based on competition. If we really accept this, how would we live differently?
Yeah. And I think that's going to really inform this conversation about spirituality and the ways that we can embrace it and the ways that we can integrate it into our everyday life. Dorothy, it's been a great second show. So we're at the end. We're going to wrap up. Thank you, listeners. Again, if you have any questions, go to spiritfireradio.com. There's a button there to send us some questions. We'd love to answer them on air. Dorothy, it's been a pleasure. We'll be back together next week.
It's a pleasure for me as well, Steve.
All right. Bye, everybody. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.